trespass. So one of the things that Pisistratus did was mildly to redistribute land. How many times historically has land redistribution been a fundamental issue of people who are or who see themselves as reformers? Okay. Pisistratus did some other interesting things too. He inaugurated a whole series of festivals at Athens, the great Panathenaic Festival, about which we'll have more to say in later lectures, for instance. He initiated massive public building projects in Athens. The first great set of public buildings in Athens were built mainly in the time of Pisistratus. Now, he did this for a number of reasons. At one level, it was boosterism. He was really trying to make people proud of Athens. He wanted Athens really to be something and to stand for something. And that was important. He was trying in a certain way to get people to focus their loyalty on the city and not on their particular class, their particular economic group, their particular geographical area, their own partisan interests. But there's another side to this. It has led some historians actually to speak of an Athenian New Deal. Somebody had to do the work of building all these buildings. And as you had this increasing underclass, and you couldn't redistribute enough land to take care of all of them, you could put large numbers of them to work, basically at state pay, to build these buildings. So these then, in the time of Pisistratus and of his sons who came after him, were some additional measures that the Athenians envisioned as ways of sort of siphoning off some of the political tension in the Athenian system. Eventually, the Spartans allied themselves with a number of Eupatrid families in Athens and threw out the Pisistratid regime. The Spartans had had enough of this regime. It looked a little bit too democratic to them. It looked a little too unstable to them. It just might give other people, like members of the Peloponnesian League, for instance, funny ideas about politics. What the Spartans wanted is a nice, stable Athens in the hands of a bunch of rich old men who wouldn't disturb the situation very much. Well, there's a wonderful law of unintended consequences in politics. What happened is a Eupatrid, a real blue blood, a man by the name of Cleisthenes, was elevated to power and given the opportunity to make some new reforms. Well, Cleisthenes was on the outs with a lot of the other Eupatrids. He really wanted to introduce some fairly moderate reforms. They were going to block him at every step of the way and say, you know, we've had enough of all this reform business. We don't know anything more. So Cleisthenes was sort of drawn to do a great deal more than sort of ever he would have dreamed probably at the beginning, and certainly a whole lot more than the Spartans ever envisioned when they thought they had thrown out exactly people like this. From Cleisthenes to Pericles, let us say then, from about 510 BC down to about 450 BC, over a period of about 60 years, two generations, let's say, full democracy emerged in Athens. Or we can say the Athenian democracy became as fully democratic as it would ever become. How did that happen? Well, Cleisthenes, as I've indicated, was very much disappointed with the Eupatrids, so he turned to the demos. He turned to the Athenian people. He began to build the people into the Athenian system in a much more decisive way than ever Solon had done. And even where Pisistratus had done this emotionally, psychologically, and to a degree economically, Cleisthenes began to do it institutionally. He began to build the demos into the system. He created, for example, a new council of 500. Now, it was divided up into groups of 50, which formed a kind of a rotating executive committee that sat for a month at a time. The way he developed this council is actually very, very complicated, but there's a very simple idea underlying it. It's quite interesting. People then in Athens spoke of the plain, the coast, and the hill. Now, these were shorthands. The plain was the plain of Attica, the great farmland. The coast meant the port, meant the merchants. The hill meant the uplands, the bad farmland. What Cleisthenes did, in a way, was gerrymander the political structure of Athens so that he took a group of people from the plain, a group from the coast, a group from the hill, and made them one group. And then another group from the plain, and a group from the coast, and a group from the hill, and made them one group. He made 10 such groups. And then each of these groups could choose 50 members annually for the council. Now, what he was trying to do was break down local interests, break down family interests, break down occupational interests, and make people cooperate, make them think about Athens. Pisistratus, remember, had the idea of doing this by making Athens beautiful, make something you're really proud of. Cleisthenes said, no, I got a different idea. I'm going to build an institution that makes people cooperate. He opened virtually all offices to almost all men. Remember Solon's timocracy, Solon's system of arraying political participation by wealth. Cleisthenes opened up virtually the whole system to almost all men. There remained a few political disabilities. We'll see one or two of them go away here in 10 or 20 years or in just a couple of minutes, depending on how you want to look at it. But essentially, men could now vote and men could now hold office. Cleisthenes introduced something else very interesting, too. One of the most distinctive features of the Athenian system, ostracism. Now, we know what ostracism is. We ostracize somebody we don't like and we won't talk to them and so on. Ostracism worked a little differently in Athens. Ostraka is the Greek word for a potsherd. Once a year, the Athenians were bidden come to the agora and they could vote. They voted by writing a name on a potsherd. If a sufficient number, several thousand, if a sufficient number of votes were cast,